All right. Welcome, everyone. It is, this is a meeting of the Kensington Fire Protection District Board of Directors, October 9th, 2019. It is now 7 p.m. I will take roll. Director Kosel?
Yes.
Nagel?
Here.
Stein is here. Dahmer?
Yes.
Padian?
Here.
Our district manager is here. And Joe Grupala, who's attending on behalf of our fire chief, is here tonight. So thank you very much for coming. We had a closed session earlier tonight, and what we have to report out is that we gave staff direction to execute a contract with RGS. What's the formal name?
Or to bring back the contract.
Bring back, sorry. Excuse, the wrong word. Sorry. Bring back a contract to the board for recruiting services for both interim and permanent district manager for the fire protection district. So our first item of business is the adoption of the consent calendar. Items 3, 4, 5, and 6 on the agenda. I was just going to say, any member of the board or the public can request to have an item removed from the consent calendar and discussed. In such a case, we would do so after oral communications.
I'd like to pull item 6, please.
Okay, and item 6 is the monthly transmittal. All right, so we shall be discussing item 6 on the consent calendar.
Then I will make a motion that we adopt consent items number 3, 4, and 5.
And do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of adopting items 3, 4, and 5 on the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. The consent calendar items 3, 4, and 5 have been adopted, and we'll return to item 6 after oral communications. So first, I'd like to turn to the board for comments.
I have two or three items. One, I would ask that we adjourn tonight in honor of Brenda, who's been an outstanding manager of the district for the last 20 years. I will report about what I learned down in Anaheim at the CSDA conference at another time, because we're pressed for time now, but I want you to know that's coming. And I also would like you to agenda Annie Shane's email that she sent, I think, both to you and to me about adopting Contra Costa transparency measures from 1995.
So
I think they're subsumed in the Brown Act and as well as Public Record Act, but I think she would prefer that we adopt them just to show our interest in transparency.
Okay.
Who was that?
Annie Shane sent me an email and a copy.
And who?
Annie Shane, S-H-A-N-E.
Okay.
So I'd ask that you agenda that for next month. And then I'm going to ask my usual question. Don, have you completed your sexual harassment training yet?
Yes.
Could you notify Brenda so that we can ask for
She's notified.
Of our transparency certificate and also our...
I need a copy of the certificate.
What?
I need a copy of the certificate.
I gave it to you.
When?
When I walked in.
Oh, it's in the envelope you gave me?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't look in the envelope.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay, great. Any other board members have any comments? I just wanted to tell the members of the public just how we're going to run the meeting tonight. So before the power outage got pushed back to 8 p.m., we had planned on immediately adjourning this meeting before it got dark. So we've decided we needed to adopt the consent calendar so that Brenda could get our bills paid. And some board members have already made plans, so we're just going to kind of push through as long as we can, as long as we have a quorum, and then we will adjourn the rest of the agenda to a meeting that will probably take place next week. So now comments from members of the public on items that are not on the agenda. Could you, so if we don't have our podiums set set up, but so if you could please stand up to make your comments, to just kind of formalize it, we'd appreciate it. Okay, all right then, with no public comment, let's return to item six.
I asked that to be pulled from the consent calendar because I had a question on line item 50131, showing that we paid our attorney last month $6,427.08, which is normally what we pay for annually for legal fees. So I was wondering what that bill was all about, and maybe you could provide each of us a copy of that bill since it's so extraordinary.
So I can't answer your question because I don't see those bills.
I can definitely share them with the board.
Doesn't that breach our privilege?
Just hang on, please.
I think the majority of it was general legal counsel.
Which what?
General.
General.
Yeah, it wasn't a specific project, like say the Else Reader contract or something like that.
And Brenda, what period of time was that bill? Do you know, was it a couple of months? Sorry, I'm trying to find it myself.
Well, it's dated September 13th, so it's probably mostly August, beginning of September. Probably all of August, actually.
Did you have a comment?
Is it the details you wanted or just the summary sheet?
I can't hear you.
Did you want the details or the summary?
I'd like to see the details.
But as our legal counsel said that the board members individually cannot see it outside of closed session. Otherwise, you'd waive privilege on the bills.
I don't care about a privilege on the bills. I'm interested in seeing what's being asked and what's demanding that amount of time.
Okay, I'm just... That's
no, not I'm an attorney. I know what legal bills look like.
So, I think that we could... You know, propose that Brenda works with the attorney, and if the attorney thinks it has to be sent to us under attorney-client privilege, they can do that.
Okay.
Is that okay? Does that sound right with you?
Well, I hate to incur more legal fees finding out whether, as a board member, I'm entitled to see the bill.
Well, I guess it's just a matter of we don't always know some of the things that might be going on. There may be a reason to maintain the privilege.
I was told that you cannot see the bills, period. Otherwise, it waives privilege. This is what our lawyers tell us.
Yeah, I say let's put that.
I would say we should get
asked.
I can't believe that we can't see the bills. But
no, I think it's just a question of do we see them under privilege or do we see them as a public record?
Well, I can deal with seeing them under privilege. Yeah. That just means I can't tell anybody else who they are.
I will find out. And let you all know.
Okay.
I don't need to have it provided as a public meeting. We get privileged material from the lawyer all the time. And just have the lawyer shoot a copy of the bill to each of us.
Okay. With respect to actually acting upon the transmittal report, though, with that request having been made, do we have a motion to approve the transmittal report?
I'll make a motion that we approve consent item number six after discussion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Okay. Aye.
Opposed?
Right.
Okay. All right. Moving on to new business. Don, item number eight. So first of all, we're not going to address the Polygon project tonight. That entailed, as I understand it, members of the public joining you, and we weren't planning on having this meeting tonight. So
yeah, the Community Warning Service has been, the EOC has been activated, so Heather Tiernan was not able to make it. Because of all the things that we have going on, the current threat, we decided to postpone. I will say that some amazing things have come to light in the last 48 hours, which will benefit the whole county, of which your board led the way. So the rest of the counties, good chance they'll all receive a grant to do polygons throughout the whole county, which benefits us because it ties in the whole road network system. I'll leave it at that for now. I can report on it later.
Okay.
It's good stuff for everybody.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other?
Thank you so much for your leadership on that. You really do a great job.
Any public comment on item number 7, since we did touch on it?
So that's been tabled, is that?
The actual presentation will come later.
Do we need a motion to table?
Well, there's no motion to discuss it, so normally I think you table a motion, and there's no motion to table.
Okay.
I think we're good. Don, number 8, I think, is worth speaking to because there are folks here who may have read the cost estimate. There's no action item on
it,
but could I ask you to just make a brief report?
Cost estimating is interesting, particularly in these times when there's so much work going on, that you have to be pretty careful and go over everything to make sure that things are covered. So we got it out to you too soon. It wasn't vetted. So the architect and I haven't gone through it, and we haven't gone back to talk to the estimator again. So we're just going to take it off. You've got it, you can see it, but it's not out there for something that we're going to approve. We're going to reissue it probably probably the next meeting when we have a chance to go through it thoroughly. And if you look, it's awfully high, so I'm interested in seeing if we can save some money.
Is there any board member comment?
I'd like to comment on that. The number they came up with was $4.8 million, which since we're talking about that state statute that says we can only spend half of the present value of the building on, it's page 8, I think, Larry, page 8 or page 6, maybe. It's page 6, I think, is where the number is. 8, I'm sorry.
The bottom line?
Yeah, the bottom line. That's just an extraordinary number, and since we're under limitation by the state that we can only spend half of the present value of the building, before we go on with any more cost estimates, I suggest we get an appraisal of the building. Because this thing's got to be out of whack by at least 50% before we could continue with the renovation project. And I think it's going to be a lot cheaper to get an appraisal than it is to be getting a new cost estimate.
I cannot imagine how a normal sort of real estate person would begin to know how to evaluate a fire station. So there's an issue there, I think. But so there is more to it than that, Janice. And we are setting up a meeting with California State Architect. And so it is the cost of replacement. And so since that building, that program, is so obsolete, and what's reflected, you know, currently would be in the building we wanted to build in the park. So we're going to go. We're going to meet with them. We're going to go over the structural analysis and work with them to approach and say, this is what it would take for a brand new building that meets the current public safety standards. And if you look at what we have, it's we're far short of that area wise and you know all everything. So we need to get a contract signed with the architect, and then we're going to go with the structural engineer to DSA, and they have a regular review time, so we will do that as soon as we can.
It would be helpful to me in reviewing this if you could break it down into what's the cost for ADA remediation, what's the cost for seismic remediation, and what's the cost of functional upgrades. Because it may be that we're not going to be able to do all three within that statutory limit. So it would be helpful to me if you could break the cost into those categories.
I'm not going to do that, but I think it's a good idea. It's just premature.
Is there any such thing as a waiver? Is there any such thing as a waiver to the 50% rule? For example, you know, we're in a unique seismic structure. structure, we have no choice but to read all of it.
All I can say is the code these days are they're not, you can't negotiate with them. I mean, all the building code stuff that we see, you have to meet every single thing. And a lot of times you have to do research to show them that you're, that's what you're doing. So it's gotten to be a very time-consuming effort. And we, you can spend almost more time getting a project approved than it does to build it. That's how complicated it's gotten.
Sounds like San Francisco.
Well, I mean, it's a statewide code, but yes.
Question? Sorry, I forgot to stand up last time. I was wondering, is it easier when the appraisal, this is for my own information, is easier
could you
when
just
the,
speak up a little bit?
Is it easier when the when you're doing that for a new building, like go through an entire process, or when it's a retrofit, like in general, because in this case you're working off an old
So if it's a new building, there's no halfway measure, you know, it's not a factor.
There's no limit.
Yeah, there's no limit. Yeah. It's a separate, it's a different animal. Yes.
Please, Matt. Yep. Well, it's clear to me, Don, what you were planning to do with getting a value for the existing building. Are you going to solicit some assessor to come up with that value? Because it's quite clear to me that reading the statute, as Director Cassell has mentioned, you're pretty well constrained on what you can do, and I would urge you not to enter any further contracts until you understand what, first of all, whether it's feasible to renovate the building, which is conditioned upon whether your costs exceed 50% of the value of this building. And it's not replacement
value,
as I understand it.
It's not the value of that building.
Pardon me?
That's the point I'm trying to make.
I know, but my question is, how are you going to value that building? You still have to come up with some value.
Well, we have a cost estimate, which we can back up with the real estate one if what we have to do.
I'm not quite sure what you mean.
Cooking the books.
If you want to say something, you can take your turn.
I mean, when you say a real estate estimate, I would assume that you want to go in and have someone who assesses public buildings like that, appraises public buildings to come up with a value for that building. I don't believe the statute implies that it's replacement cost. I think it's the value of the building itself as it stands right now on that property. And I will just say again that you have on your agenda enter into a contract with the architect for further work. I would urge you not to spend any more money.
So we're focusing on item 8.
Okay, but for the purposes, again, of my question, how do you plan to get a value of the building as it exists now?
So thanks for your comment. So Don, the thing is that this kind of dovetails with number 9. As I understand it, the fact that there is some interaction with the Department of the State Architect mm-hmm. to actually figure out how to get to the application of that building code.
Yes, in other words, we're
going to
talk.
Maybe you could explain that a little bit, because it sounded like it's not so simple as to just get an appraisal, or maybe you could explain what you've learned so far from the Department of the State Architect.
I talked to DSA. Explain the situation. They wondered why we just didn't knock it down and move someplace else. I said we have no place to go, so that's where we're stuck. But anyway, I had a conversation. They suggested that we take the project to office of the state architect. They have an office in Oakland, and that they have a regular setup to go through projects to evaluate. So they will. All we're asking for is to talk about the replacement, which is a different thing than he's talking about. So we'll see where we end up.
May I suggest that you contact the Department of Conservation, which is actually the department that's responsible for implementing the law that you're dealing with.
No, it's actually mine.
You mean the county?
No. State Department of Conservation.
State Department of Conservation.
State
is essentially responsible for implementing the Altus-Brolo Earthquake Safety Act, which is really what this act covers. And so I would urge you maybe to contact them, see if they have any experience in that area, because the geology...
Say that again.
Department of Conservation, and it's also the Geology and Seismic Board that writes the regulations that implements that particular law. So that would be my recommendation.
Okay. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think
no, I know you're not.
Maybe minerals and mining and minerals are in the same department, but so when I looked, I found that they had were the ones that were setting some of the standards.
Just a suggestion.
So DSA tends to be the agency in the state that deals with codes. You know, they write the building code and the structural code, and this ends up in the structural code side.
Well, there I would probably just,
okay,
I'm
so
sorry.
Okay, so anyway,
I'm
going to say thank you. So that's,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any other public comments on item number 8 that kind of moved a little bit into number 9 because they're so interrelated?
But there is action required on item number 9, right?
Right, no action required on number 8. Number 9, I'm not sure if we'll get a motion.
Okay.
So let's see.
Oh, well, I lost a little bit of the back and forth in terms of this appraisal and evaluation. But it seems to me if you're starting with the number of what you think it's going to cost, which is your, what, $4.2 million, and then you're hoping for some sort of appraisal or whatever number that will fit the code, I call that cooking the books because you're working backwards from what seems to me to be appropriate. You need to start with what the valuation is. However,
of replacement.
Well, it sounded like there was a question whether it's replacement or the appraised value. And that's the legal point.
Isn't that why we're meeting with the state in the first place? Isn't that why we're meeting with the DSA?
We're
going to go to the state and ask them what they want.
No, not ask them what they want. You need to have, you need to get a number of what...
Yeah, what they need.
Well, no, not what they need, what number they are going to consider, somehow get the number that you're going to consider as to what's, whether it's the replacement or the value, and I think that's a legal issue. And then, okay, the top you can spend is 50% of that. But if you start with your, okay, it's going to cost us 4. Whatever million, and then you're gonna work to get a value that's going to fit that number. And I call that cooking the books.
No, well, wait a minute now. That's rather insulting. So.
No.
Well, yeah, but okay. So I'll tell you why. We actually did a scheme for the park that was a modern building. And it was 10,000 square feet, including about 20-25% of the other agency. And so we have a cost for that, but it's another estimate. And it's been updated. That was a few years ago. They actually have updated it. It's gone up. The cost has gone up. So we do have that as so. What
so
more do you want?
Again, this is not a town hall, this is public comment. So if you have another comment, you can stand and make your comment. But my sense of number 8, Kevin, do you have any comment on the cost estimate, number 8?
Thank you. I believe it is important to understand whether it's a replacement or an appraisal value. I don't have an answer to that question. If it was a tear down and a replacement, maybe it would be more expensive than a remodel. And either way, you have to have a functioning fire station. You have to have a functioning fire station. So if the appraisal is just for bricks and mortar, it needs to assess the functionality
right.
of a building.
Which is the case I'm trying to make.
Which the case, I think you're trying to make that case. I think this is right. It's the functionality because that's a replacement thing, but assessing it is also assessing its functionality and not just not just could you convert it to a condo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So also, Don, I just wanted to clarify, so it was around $3.7 million, which I understand they've kind of built some things in there that we don't necessarily need, but also the $1 million-ish contingency, that doesn't factor into the number that's used to come up with the 50%.
Well, I mean, when you normally, let's see, first of all, we only have plans. We don't have a set of, some working drawings that we could go ahead and mm-hmm. do detail. The cost estimate looks detailed, but it's a lot of guess. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to lose my train of thought.
I asked you about whether they use the contingency.
Oh, no. Okay, thank you. So anyway, because there's so little real concrete, you know, that we don't know what the structure is, the mechanical is, we don't know those things. They have not, it's not been engineered. So they put in a contingency. Typically, in normal days, maybe with more information, you might have a contingency of 5%. And so they're at 20. And I think part of that is the marketplace, and part of it is they just don't have enough information to do any better than they have now. So typically, you want to do an estimate at early stage. I mean, usually we would do it with more information. A new building we would do with more information, or this one. And then typically, as you develop the product, you answer questions, and that contingency tends to sort of shrink. In other words, you're biting into it, and in the end, you hope you haven't exceeded that, but you could be under two.
Any comments, Larry, from you?
I guess it seems to me that there's two issues that we have to decouple here. First of all, we're not sure about the cost estimate.
We're going to
refine that.
Yeah.
That's the numerator in the equation. And we're not sure what the value of the building is. That's the denominator. And they're two entirely different things. So we're going to try to get how we calculate the denominator from the state.
From the state.
And we're going to see if we have a revised numerator from the person who made the estimate. Right. So that's basically the action that we're taking at this point.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think it's fair.
Okay.
That's like a good summary.
Yes. I just have one question. This 50%, is that all hard costs, or
it's hard costs.
Okay, well,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So it doesn't include the plans, the architects, the...
No, would not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Any other public comments? What time do you have to leave?
Oh, I was going to leave 10 minutes ago.
Oh.
she told me that we weren't going to have a meeting, so I went ahead and finished the plan.
But we just had to get our bills paid,
so
we just pushed it a bit, and the power is still on.
Yeah.
So
I'm leaving now. Thank you.
Do we need to make a motion to authorize our architect to meet with the state so that we can figure out?
Yeah, it's one of the things we have to do, yeah.
So,
need a motion for item number 9.
Are we going to go ahead with the way it is, or are we going to...
Well, so I got the impression that we needed to add a couple more, expand the scope just a bit. So this is an engagement for the architect to represent us in meetings with the DSA and to attend and present at the public forum on November 16th. But it's come to my attention anyway that the architect, to prepare to meet with the DSA, needs to actually review this cost estimate and potentially maybe iterate once or twice with the cost estimator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we didn't build that into this scope of work. So we don't know if this... What's your comment about whether this scope of work...
Have they told us how much it's going to cost? And usually an engagement is not a price negotiation. It's just an engagement letter. We want them to do that, correct?
It's just that the question is whether the scope is broad enough, because the scope right now does not include evaluating the cost estimate and working with the cost estimator to hone in on a potentially more accurate estimate.
I think the scope is very broad. It says engagement. In fact, we can forget about the 11/16 public forum, and we can put that off for a later time, and just say to represent the KFPD in meetings with the Department of State Architect. Period.
And we have a proposal?
We have a proposal. Brenda gave us, you gave us the proposal for
this. I also emailed it, and I also posted it online.
Yeah, it's right here. Okay. Oh yeah, this is one, so it's essentially, when I saw it, I got confused initially, but what they're basically doing is telling us their hourly rate, so the scope of work, the hourly rate.
Your hourly rate here.
No, well, they're also, so the front page is the architect, RDC,
okay. Yeah.
But I guess they need to engage the structural engineers in this project as mm-hmm. well. So they also got a quote from the structural.
So it sounds like you just need to add one item to the list of tasks, and then you could adopt it as amended.
So when we talked about this, we were trying to get an idea of what the cap might be, and we don't have that, is that right?
Well, I guess it's only if someone wants a cap as part of a motion.
Okay.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe someone would like to make a motion to open this up for discussion.
Well, I would just like to move that we approve the engagement letter from Ross Trulis Kuzenberry Architecture to represent KFPD in meetings with the Department of State Architect.
Okay, I'm happy with that. Okay.
Does that mean you're seconding it?
I'm seconding it.
So we're not having them vet the cost estimate?
Well, that if that whatever they
is
need to do to represent us at the
department. Well, but I guess it's not on
they don't explicitly say it. It says attend yeah. meetings with the DSA yeah. and other regulatory agencies with the project structural engineer to determine the limitations on renovation of an essential okay. services yeah. building.
Yeah.
And then it says attend the public meetings.
Yeah, I think it's embedded there.
It's implicit.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't include the attending the public meetings to present the conceptual design in my motion. I can amend my
well,
motion.
Well, it's the public meeting.
Huh?
He doesn't have money for the public meeting. So we
that's in November, right?
Yes.
We can make that a separate motion. This is what we need to, we can't meet with these guys until we pass this motion.
Well,
right?
One of the things that driving everybody crazy is we keep coming back with a little bit and a little bit, and we, you know, and it seems like we're nickel and diming, but it's because we've been moving kind of fast. And so I think the two of us are trying to kind of collect things together, so we're not, you know.
Well,
why would you, I mean, you just have to.
It seems to me these are apples and oranges. I mean, one is to have them present the architectural plans at a public meeting in November, which is fine. And the other one is to have us, is to represent us at the DSA meeting,
okay,
which is next week or something like that.
No, we don't.
Well, we don't know when it is, but it's as soon as possible.
We can't, when we get the contract, then we can start
because
working.
There ain't gonna be a public meeting if we can't build this building.
Well, then they won't spend the money.
Well, I think there would still be a public meeting to explain why we can't build a building.
Well,
I think we have to tell people where we
okay,
are.
I'm not sure that we have to have
the architect. Yeah, I hear you.
Well, it's an
okay. In that case, I'll amend my motion to say to represent the KFPD in meetings with the Department of State Architect and to attend and present at the November 16, 2019 public forum.
Thank you.
Is that, do I have a second?
Yes, second.
Okay, so discussion, Kevin, do you have any comments that you'd like to make about this?
No, it's just interesting, IDA's extra service is to meet with the architect, and then on the RDC proposal, it's meet with the architect and attend public meetings. So I don't know if so the question, I haven't taking a dive into the, I assume they would already be meeting with the architect.
Trying to get these things done
in very short.
IDA is a structural engineer.
But the RDC was already going to be a meeting with the architect, the state architect.
They are the architect.
Yeah, the state architect.
And we're bringing the structural along because
right. But RDC, what I'm saying, RDC was already going to be meeting with the DSA on our behalf.
Not till we decided last week.
Okay. We have to pass this proposal for them to do it.
I was trying to find the best way to get this next step. Yep. So that's what it came up. Not exactly what they were looking for, but we'll work on it.
Call the question.
All right, public.
One quick question.
Yeah, please, if you could stand, please. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And what's the purpose of meeting with the state architect? One of the items that will be covered in that meeting?
I think I've said it three times.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I think I've said it three times.
Well, maybe I missed it. I'm sorry.
To determine the denominator in the equation.
How
to calculate.
To determine how to adhere to the state regulation.
That is to say, I'm sorry. That is to say, to understand what is necessary for a cost estimate for the building?
No, to understand how do we determine the value of the structure as it's written in that code?
The existing building.
How to interpret the code?
No. What a modern fire station needs to be.
How do we adhere to the law, to the code?
Well, I don't know.
It's like this architect will tell us, do we need an appraisal or what? Like, how do you determine the value of a public structure? That seems to be what no one has encountered before.
Right.
Right? I mean, you haven't bumped up against this code before, as I understood it.
No. Usually when a building is costing more than it's 50% or 30 or 40%, you tear it down and build it again, and we can't do that. So where is the dilemma?
Well, okay, my first comment is, I think you might not want to specify the date of your public meeting because I think there's a month to get those.
So that is not on the agenda, the date of our meeting. The date of our meeting is not something we're trying to decide tonight.
It's part of this motion that the architect presented at a November public meeting, and that was
voted.
Okay. Thank you for your comment.
No, okay, I'm not finished. That's the first part.
We have to hurry, but go ahead.
Don just said he thinks the point, and he hopes the point that the state architect will decide that the value of this building is what it costs to do a new building, and I just don't think that that's the way.
I didn't hear Don say that.
We should rephrase it if that's what you heard. We want to go to the state and ask them how we adhere to the requirement
I can accept that, but you made a comment about it being implied that it was going to be the cost of just building a whole new building.
We don't know what it's going to be until we talk to them.
Okay, but he's going with a preconceived preconceived opinion of how the evaluation should be made, and I don't think that's quite right.
Well, that's why we're having that.
They're
third.
The ones that will determine not you or me.
We need to vote.
That's why we're having a third party meet with the state architect, so people can't accuse Don of this or that.
It prejudices what Don says to the architect.
I'm done.
Okay, the architect is licensed. Yes, thank you. Yeah. All right, so I don't think we need you to repeat your motion. Does anyone need to hear it again? Are we good? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Okay. At this point, we will still have a quorum if you leave.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Sorry, I realized. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm really late.
So now we're down.
Please be forgiven.
All right.
I'll buy you a beautiful talk.
Okay. So, Kevin, I'd like to propose I just want to make one comment. I think that if you're all okay with this, let's revisit 10 and 11 when we have our special meeting. We have to get back together again in a week.
So we're going to table those.
10 and 11, the proposal from RDC for the extra services temporary fire station site feasibility study.
Do we need a motion for that?
I think the way it works is if I call for a motion on 10 and there is none, then the matter just doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
So do I have a motion to open the discussion on 10? All right. Is there any public comment on 10? I do want to mention that the site, the temporary fire station site, appears that it will be at the Unitarian Church. They've offered it to us. We had thought it might be at the
Now you're on 11, right?
Well, that was number 10, was to design out that site. That's what number 10 was, for the architects to fully design out the temporary fire station site. But I think we still have to ask for whether there's any public comment on item 10. Okay, item number 11 is the proposal for the cost estimate for the temporary facility, which would be based upon actually the results of number 10. So first the architect would need to design the temporary facility, and then there would be a cost estimate. So do I have any motion to discuss item 11? Okay, is there any public comment on item 11?
And this special meeting, when did you anticipate this special meeting?
In approximately a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
That seems like very soon, but okay.
Well,
we
couldn't get through our whole agenda tonight, unfortunately. We would have been here for 3 hours had we gotten through the whole agenda. So we'll see how far the three of us get. All right, then, Kevin, I'd like to move on. 12, 13, and 14 are essentially your items. So would you like to start with any one of them that you wish?
Well, we can see how far we can go if you want, although I'd rather have everybody available to look at. But it's fine. If we talk about the fire danger signs, this is something suggested mainly by our neighbors up on the ridge, and Maya Therese here. It was in large part her idea to have a sign up there. When I discussed this with Larry, who's also at the meeting up there, and with the chief, there seemed to be enthusiasm for it. So the devil's in the details. I would like to, and I don't really care if we make a decision on this, but I think this needs to proceed orderly in four ways. The first question is, are these signs in general a good idea? If you didn't see the agenda packet there, the signs that basically look like this, you see them everywhere. This one has five divisions. The one that we're looking at has four, because it's just low, moderate, high, and terrible. And that's more visible, easier to deal with. So the thing is, first of all, whether in principle these signs are a good idea. One or both or either. If they're not a good idea, if the board doesn't think it's a good idea on advice from the public, then we're done. Then if in principle, well, they might be a good idea, we're not going to rule it out, then we start considering the sites. So we have a site that we're looking at on the Arlington, the median strip, close to the public safety building. And then we're considering a site up in the hills near Grizzly Peak and Beloit, or alternatively Grizzly Peak and Canyon Drive, depending on who owns that, what could happen. If those are one or the other, then you consider those seriatim. The third question really is how are these signs maintained? Well, it's easy for the fire department personnel to maintain the sign down in the Arlington. The one on the hills is another question.
By maintain, you mean set it to the...
Yeah, each day, right.
And maintain so, can mean many things. Right. It doesn't mean the fire department
Well, in principle,
painting it or staining
it. No. In principle, if there was deterioration of the sign or some vehicle hit it, that would not be the job of anybody except the fire district. The determination of how you set the indication on the sign, the information quality, would seem to be best if it correlates with what's in East Bay Park, because that's close to it and it's going to receive that danger. But that's discussable. And then the other question is who will maintain it? There is some sentiment from people who've discussed this that, well, why doesn't the fire department maintain it? Because, you know, they should be making rounds anyway. But my sense, which I think the chief could speak to, is that really when you've got three people, the three people maybe ought to be in the station. You can't send somebody up to do if they're patrolling, but I don't think they necessarily patrol. The other thing is for a group of residents to take the responsibility of doing it, and we have interest from people in doing that. In my suggestion is we'd need at least a half dozen people to comprise a group to do this and spell each other and take weeks and substitute when needed, just so you'd have a quorum. Those are just thoughts. And that's sort of where the direction of the argument, I think, flows most logically. But if the first question, like, are fire danger signs even a good idea? If they're not, then it stops there and we don't talk about it anymore.
Could we have an input from the fire department on that?
That's a Chief Pagoni probably question. Personally,
you're here for him.
Okay. I will tell you personally, we took the fire dangers sign down off Station 71. Other people that I've interacted with said it's always a problem, that it's never set right, and it has not been favorable. However, the one by Station 7 in Berkeley seems to work well because it's right next to the station. So if there was something close to Station 65, I don't see a problem with the fire department maintaining that. These are, you know, my personal opinions. So up on the Arlington, or up on the hill, would be problematic to send a crew up there every day to, or whatever, to reset it. My hope is that we can get to the technology and polygons and tie into people's phones versus needles on wood. But, that's my opinion.
In your experience, how often do you actually have to change the needle on the sign? I mean, we have seasons.
Yeah, I've never maintained one before, so I don't know. Right now, we're looking at the weather on an hourly basis, because tonight we do have a dipole wind that's supposed to hit here at 8 o'clock. We are on a red flag right now, but as you know, our microclimate isn't always reflective of the region's red flag. It's not very hot out, it's not very windy out, but tonight is a threat, and hence PG&E is supposed to shut power down in 10 minutes. So
I love it.
We look at that very often, all the time. Whether it goes from high to very high to extreme, I don't know what those parameters would be.
Four is easier, isn't it? Just low, medium, high, and extreme.
Yeah.
This would be extreme. A lot of our fall and summer weather is high, but in the winter it's low. I mean, my sense is it wouldn't need to be changed day by day, but you would have to have people responsible for it.
Yeah, and that I can't speak for the fire chief as to whether he'll endorse fire crews driving up the hill.
Yeah, or just if people up there who live up there are responsible for doing it in coordination is the other option that's been presented.
I mean, the feedback I've gotten from other people in the industry is the biggest complaint is that it's not maintained, it's not set correctly, and it causes confusion. I think somewhere up Highway 80 in the Sierra Nevada, she took it down off the side of the hill because it was always incorrect. Again, I don't know how often you'd have to change it, but if a kid goes up there and plays with it, who knows? You know, I don't know. Somebody would have to look at it every day to make sure it's accurate.
They're lockable.
Yeah, lockable. Okay, yeah, there you go. Yeah. So that being said, hopefully that answered your question.
Thank you. Any thoughts from the public, I guess, are we...
We can ask. Yeah, we don't have a motion on the table yet, but I think we can still talk about it.
May I mention to ask is it Chief Battalion Chief, or...?
Yes, sir.
I'm wondering, what happened on Station 70, it's 71, correct? Or 79?
It used to be down in front of Station 71.
What happened that the fire team there found that it was not working? I'm just kind of curious.
It was 10 years ago. It was right when I was hired. And so I don't know the history of why it was taken out.
Okay. I was just curious if you know.
So I have a question, Kevin. What stage of the project are you at right now? Because I think I understood that, I don't know about the one on the Arlington, but I think the one on Grizzly Peak, we need approval from the county?
We'd probably need for both because the median strip's owned by the county, yes, Brenda. So we'd need permission on both, and we would need people from the county to make sure that's being situated properly, and then it seems like they would decide who mounts it and the standards are mounting, but they come with the big posts and the signs.
So are you looking for approval to go forward conditioned upon us getting all the necessary approvals from the county and all that sort of thing?
If people think it's a good idea, then it would seem to make sense to talk to, you know, further to the agencies. The cost here is somewhere in the mid-2000s, plus whatever it costs to mount. That's for both of them. Even if we had just one, it would be something that people would see. And I want my editor to talk, if that's okay, about this. But I think the main thing is, like on the Arlington, there's just so much traffic of people going all through the county. It's visible. Yeah, and there's argument. We talked about it in our committee meeting. And yeah, but some people say, well, I just don't see it because I don't walk by it. There's a sign on the fire building about the big public meeting, and nobody said, well, yeah, but people, when they drive past, they're not looking at the fire station, but they will see the median strip. You know, and some people just don't notice it, and some people do. You know, some people thought, well, it's economical enough that just putting it up there would be fine, but the maintenance is the question. So, Maya, thank you for coming.
Sure. Thanks for letting me know, Kevin. And I just want to thank everyone for taking on, and Kevin for kind of bringing this up to us. I really appreciate it. And so I wanted to start by saying, like, I totally support the implementation of these signs. Like, I feel they are a valuable method of relaying information about and reminding residents of the current fire danger, especially up on Grizzly Peak. And if, honestly, the Arlington is the only one we can get, great. I feel like up on Grizzly Peak, there is not all this other signage around that people are looking at. They're not driving quite as fast. I feel like it's more apparent. I think not only that, of course, like getting phone, you know, things saying like red flag day or what the warning is important, but you know, those have to be done residents, and we have people in short-term rentals who stay in our neighborhood. We have all of these things, and on a daily basis, being reminded of it. For me personally, like, I'm up on Skyline and I see theirs three times a week. Every time I'm like, oh right, I need to clean out my gutters. Oh right, I need to do that. So I feel like it is valuable to our community and to our residents. As far as the sign up on Grizzly Peak and the issue with the fire department not being able to go up there and spend the time when there's only three people in the station, I completely get that. I think there is a challenge because it's potentially confusing and also legally vulnerable for volunteers to be in charge of changing that alert status. Even if we got six people to sign something saying they could do it, what happens in 10 years, five of them move away? Someone has to be in charge of coordinating that. I feel like there is this place for an informal situation where the fire department is in charge of coordination, but they could email myself and the other people who are very active on my street and in our area, and say, hey, change the sign today. They get confirmation that we change it, that kind of thing. And I think that would work fine, but I think having something formal where we're in charge of coordinating each other and making it all happen, like we all have firsthand, we all know firsthand the challenges that we've been getting residents to meetings and to CERT events. So I do not think that the board should even want citizens to be in charge of full coordination. Like I feel like we are not, you know, we are not the knowledgeable authority on that, and ultimately the fire department would need to be in charge of that, and we as a community would support the fire department as best we could. So however that, and I'd be happy to try to help work out how we can make that happen, but I do not believe that we'll be able to get six people to sign something and say they are fully responsible for this, especially given kind of the legal ramifications of that, whatever they might be. That was the basic thing. I think you addressed one of my other issues, was who was going to maintain the sign if someone crashed into it. I also know, like, the fire department with the red flag days, like, sometimes they're up there, so sometimes if they're up there, they could change it. That's something to consider. Again, it's an informal agreement, but it would probably be work out better ultimately than having something that's formal in place where we have to organize getting the information, changing the sign. I just don't foresee that happening long term. And like you're saying, that it just wouldn't work out. I do feel like we need the backing of the fire department there to really make that happen. I think that's basically it. Again, like I totally support the implementation of these signs. I think that it will be really valuable to our community on many levels.
Let me just say, I would support it as well. I agree with what I said. You might want to also check, if you haven't, what Berkeley's experience has been. The chief said that they have maintained one. And I think the state regional park district also maintains one or more, and how they do that and what their experience has been. I would find it difficult to put the onus on the residents, and possibly even with the fire department coordinating, you know, having three or four people with email addresses, if no one looks at their email, you know, you do run into that. But I think it's a good idea, certainly one by the station, and I would like to see one up by Grizzly Peak, only because I live there and I see that area and I see a lot of cars come through. People have to slow up going up the hill, which means that, you know, they would probably see that more than they may even see the one on the island. So I appreciate the consideration of doing this. Thank you.
This is a quick simplification comment. Instead of a four thing timeline, just a normal and red flag day sign, that is a simple starting point. And that's like the first, you know, big issue. And that, in a sense, would also kind of correlate more to what the fire department is doing those days. So then simply just adding, like, saying, one more location where a red flag warning goes up.
Thanks, Cyrus. Yes, these things actually do come with a little rider you can put in the hand, red flag today. And as we talked about in our committee meeting, why not just put red flag indicators up, and why even worry about fire danger? Because a red flag day, you know, if you just put it out on the apron in front of the public safety building, a lot of people will see it. One of the problems we also asked about is that we consider is that people don't know what red flag means. And you can look it up. Mostly you learn about when a red flag day is designated, but it doesn't tell you what to do. When it tells you what to do, it's stuff like you have to burn things with a top on it and with grating this size. You can't burn here. Second thing is, you know, don't throw lighted cigarettes out of car windows. Well, this is, you know, nobody smokes. And people know that. There's a third thing, and I forgot what it was. But I mean, even today, it's a red flag. I mean, I'm looking in the middle of the day, the people cross the street in their backyard, they start lighting up with the Weber grill. You know, and so my neighbor and I go over and, you know, excuse me, it's a red flag day. Can you kind of not do that? It's like, oh, okay, fine. But people don't actually understand what it is. So
sometimes when this is fire danger, it's like, okay, I get fire danger. Red flag, I don't know what red flag is. And you were going to say, Maya.
I was going to say, like, I totally agree completely. Like, and also just having a thing that says red flag. I think people just pass by it because it's new. But when there's something that's consistent that's up there and it says fire danger, it also reminds them of the things that they need to do every September. You need to clean out your gutters. You need to trim back your trees. Like, these things that we talk about with soot. At CERT all the time, like, these are part of maintenance. And I think this is a regular reminder that people need to have, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't associate red flag with
no, that's what I'm saying, gutters. But the fire danger, they work. Do. When they
fire danger some is a big thing, yeah. I think
information,
so, yeah.
Right? That so like, when we get into September, right, when I see it, that it's like, oh, we're right. It's September. We're getting into higher fire danger.
Yeah, and it seems like signs should be for like very terse alert level stuff, and the stuff that we send out as a district is mm-hmm. like, it's fall. You should be doing this.
Yeah.
So that's a you know, there's no easy way to do this, but I think what you're doing is you're bringing out what instruments like this are actually for, mm-hmm. and the question is how can they be effective.
Oh, you mentioned a number of things that people shouldn't be doing on a red flag day. Well, I mean, I consider myself, you know, trying to keep current, but it wouldn't have occurred to me to not start up the weather because it's out in the middle, it's whatever, but maybe more specific, you know, a fire handout, more specific things of what not to do, like I know some of these things say not to cut your weeds with a metal thing because it'll cause sparks, but that's part of the education process.
Yeah, but that's not part of these signs. These signs are very terse.
No, you were referring to what people think about
how they interpret them, and you're right, okay. They don't. It's.
Let's see where we are, because we don't have a motion on the table yet. What are you guys thinking?
Well, I guess I'm very much in favor of this. I think it's a great public relations thing, and it's a great way to raise awareness. And I very much like the idea of having one up on the bridge, because that's where the fire hazard is. I think all of the problems that have come up are solvable. We now have a emergency preparedness committee. Several of the members on the committee live up there, so we could do this entirely through our own committee. I think we could in terms of who sets the sign, and it's really not that big a deal. I don't think. Who sets the sign is that big a deal, but maybe we should get Mike Pagoni's input on that. But and is there a long lead time on these signs that, so maybe the Emergency Preparedness Committee could come up with a proposal that we could present.
We did talk about it at our last meeting. We basically summarized the discussion just now. And we want to be very careful not to recommend or vote on anything to the board because it might involve money. And we're currently concerned about needing to file 700 forms about conflict of interest and financial investments, so this wouldn't be a conflict. So we're being scrupulous about not recommending anything to the board, especially that involves money, which almost everything does eventually. So all I'm doing is summarizing our discussion.
So your suggested motion is to authorize up to $2,500 for the purchase of the sign. Would that include both signs?
That includes both signs. It does not include anything related to clearing the area with the county and mounting them. There's also a question about whether it would be better at Grizzly Peak and Beloit, or if you brought it to the little strip that's between Canyon, goes down into the park, and the extension of Grizzly Peak, there's just a little space there. It's very visible, it'd be more visible because everybody going past would see that, even if they're just on Spruce and Wildcat. You know, that's discussable, but I think the main things are for the board, and I would hope in its entirety to discuss whether this is a good idea and whether either one is a good idea, whether both, and then, I mean, I don't think money is a big concern here, frankly, for what good it could be doing, because a lot of people see that good. But the question is, the main hitch in the get-along is maintaining how it works on the hill. And I suspect, along with BC Joe, that that Chief Mike is not going to want to commit fire department personnel to maintain this. So the question is, how does this get done, and is that satisfactory to people?
Because I was thinking what I would like to see is maybe a written protocol for managing the signs that the fire chief approves of. So either, you know, potentially a motion contingent upon the fire chief approving a management protocol or something like that. But it seems like what you said, you know, that we kind of need to know how the fire chief feels about the signs, especially the one in Grizzly Peak.
So maybe what we could do is work up a protocol and bring it in next month for the board to deal with.
Sounds like a reasonable.
Is that okay?
And the EPC is going to work up that protocol?
Yeah, we'll get it done.
We'll do that with the chief.
Okay. In fact, if we write something up and talk about it in the edit before the meeting, is it permissible if I send it to the chief to see what he thinks in advance of the meeting?
Can I just add, I know I had talked to at least one director about if we wanted to to specialize them, that's not what I'm looking for, but to add Kensington Fire, like a logo on it.
That's more expensive than you can do it, but that would be kind of in place of putting a red flag. Or maybe, I mean, you could adapt.
I think you can actually do both.
Okay.
I have emailed the company, Smoking Zone, and basically for three signs, because one sign is going to be two-sided, one is going to be one-sided, and I guess if the location changes, I don't know if that's still the case.
They have two-sided signs.
Yeah. So it'd be $614 to customize, and basically a little over $200 for each side. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Mike said this publicly or not, but he has already told me he will not commit the fire crew to maintain the sign up on the hill in front of the station, not a problem.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It would be very nice as part of the public relations thing, to have either our website address on the sign or a phone number, so that if somebody has a question of what does that mean, the fire danger is extremely high today, they would be able to, you know,
call me and I can. Well, no, they won't call me. But they, I was going to say, and then you're going to
either call them or look it up on the website.
What
does
extreme fire danger mean?
Well, you put too much small writing on a sign, nobody sees it. It's got to be.
I think your point about the red flags is valid. They go by and they say, oh, it's a red flag day today. That's great. Well, what does that mean? Yeah. Is it going to be a white flag day tomorrow and a green flag day next day? Or
the race day? Maybe the thing to do would be, I mean, as we were talking before, you use very terse signals, and then on the website and in educational materials, you explain what that means.
Yes.
We're due, as Mabry points out, for a big explanation of red flag days around here.
A suggestion, which, considering the relations between the police and the fire, but you might, as maintaining one up above, the police are patrolling
they claim all these places all the time. So
no,
we can't. We those flyers that we developed about people who are parking in not very smart places for virgin. Brenda tried to contact the police and ask, and there was no response. They even if they would just carry them in their cars, which, you know, if you see it, maybe you don't want to give them a ticket.
Okay, that's no reason not to ask if they could ask a patrol, if the chief or the board could ask the patrolman do the maintenance daily. It's a suggestion, and, you know, there's no harm in trying.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of having an emergency preparedness committee do it more, but I think that's a detail that we have to work on.
So, just for the record, then, do we have a motion on this item tonight?
Sounds like we want to bring it back at the next meeting.
I think if we bring it back, we develop the protocol, and if we have some commitments of people up there, I mean, on the committee and also off it, that are just. But if that's, and we can discuss that at the committee meeting that we have. We may not get to this in the meeting we have a week from now, but we'll see what we can do.
Okay, so I think that means we move on. What's your preference, Kevin, for 13 and 14? Larry, well, did you have a time limit tonight?
I was just going to comment that they were supposed
any
to
any moment
turn
now.
The power off 4 minutes ago.
Those two items aren't included in the agenda packet.
Which two items?
13 and 14.
Oh, you're sure?
Yes, they are.
Not at the end.
Yes, they are. They're right after the fire danger assignments.
I'm sorry, they're right after.
After the fire danger, after the one we just considered, they're separated by the blue paper.
Yep.
I see a letter by Dave. Pass.
That's right.
BPC report, I see all sorts of references by the people who do the signs. But
they're right before the fire chief's report.
Well,
okay, should we proceed?
Okay, what page of the...
It's not paginated, but it's right...
Yes, it is on the...
I think we're looking at the hard copy, and it's in the...
It's on the website, too, actually.
Where is it?
I'm not looking at the website right now, so it's in the agenda. Okay. Could you say that? So just before you get started, Kevin, I guess Dave's saying that power is working its way out in Kensington, so still welcome to start the discussion.
I would suggest a turn.
Yeah.
You said it's in the next 2 hours, but it changes everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's terrible.
If you'd like to just hold off, these two might take some discussion. I'm fine with it either way.
Right before the chief president's report, there's a financial report.
Okay. All right. So, is it all right if you then proceed with any fire chief report? Or we could just adjourn.
What's
your pleasure, Larry?
I think we should just adjourn.
Yeah, I think we'll get in the middle of something, then the power's going to go out, and then we should all get to our cars safely and head home.
So, based on the current threats, for those that aren't aware, PG&E is threatening to turn the power off. The reason they're doing that, if anyone has any questions, is because of strong winds and low humidity that is supposed to be coming across the state from the Great Basin. That is the threat, in my opinion, is the biggest threat that we have, so I take it serious. That being said, if you're not aware of how PG&E works their shutoffs, they're telling us that turning the power back on is part of the problem. Yeah. And that if the power does go off tonight, they're telling us to tell the public a minimum of 48 hours before it comes back on. So if it goes out tonight, you're looking at probably Friday-ish.
If it doesn't go out,
then the winds have changed. And
yes,
so it's basically based on weather. If all of a sudden the winds disappear, obviously PG&E does not want to turn power off. They lose money if they do.
Yeah.
But that's all Mother Nature right now. So that I apologize for the on off
You don't have to apologize. They're PG, you will work for them.
Well, but, you know, it's been a crazy day. So thank you for your patience.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming tonight.
They've already created a public relations nightmare.
I think the tension's good, but
So, my understanding for adjourning a meeting before we finish the agenda is that we need to at least adjourn to a date that we hope we can meet, but we have the option to change it. So, our first estimate would be probably the 17th.
I believe it's called postponement. A motion to postpone.
The attorney told me that we would adjourn and we would pick a date. So in other words, we adjourn until next Thursday at 9 a.m. as an example.
Okay, but we don't have a date.
It's the 17th would be the...
Was kind of what we were doing.
So that's the Friday?
That's the Thursday.
Well, today is... Right. Today's Wednesday. Right. You're right. Got it.
And did we get any suggestions for times? Or we can
I need to contact the church and see what's available. But 4 out of 5 of you are available, and preference was either early or late.
The preference was I think it said 3:30.
Okay.
Is what Don said.
Okay.
I'm good with that.
Okay, so do I?
So in that case, I'll make a motion that we adjourn the meeting. To be resumed on Thursday, October 17th at 3:30 p.m. At a place to be determined, because we don't know for sure where we're going to have it.
At 3:30 p.m.?
3:30 p.m.
Do I have a second? Oh, sorry.
That's my motion.
Second.
And I'm sticking to it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. So we wanted to adjourn our meeting tonight in honor of Brenda, who, if any of you did not hear, Brenda will be leaving the fire district at the end of the month, and we're all terribly sad about that. But we will see her again, hopefully on October 17th, and we will have a more fitting adjournment then. We want to remind everybody about the open house. Oh, is it still iffy?
I think it's happening, because it's not expected to be a red flag.
The one on Friday.
On Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday, October 12th from 10 to 2,
yes.
With the cake and the celebration of signing the contract with El Cerrito for another 10 years. That will be at 11 o'clock.
Yes.
Is that right?
And it's also Fire Prevention Week.
Yes.
And the CERT team will also be there. Chris Hillier.
Thank you.